hearts. Sharp swords with handle art to spar trolls and charge tolls to cross roads where bandits are. Catacombs and giant doors protect the chest that stores some legendary items with the dragon bones and iron.
It's a grand theft of Elder Scrolls, Simon's Quest with Toe and Earl, rocket shoes to Everclue, Easter eggs and gaming news. The POTUS need some bad dudes to crash a crew like Bandicoot. All shit a gaming and glitch control issues. Control issues.
Yes, yes, y'all.
Yes, y'all. Yes, y'all.
Yes, y'all. Well, this is Control Issues. I am the AMC.
And this is A-Dub. You can find us at control-issues.com. You can go to your podcast provider, wherever that may be. Look for Control Issues, download it, subscribe to it, rate it, review it. You can also go over to Spotify, give us some of those fractions of a penny per thousand spins. We greatly appreciate it. Head on over to twitch.tv/controlissuespod, where we put up gameplay videos for your viewing pleasure. Hop on over to X. My Control Issues is the handle. You know, we might be hanging around on X a little longer. We might not. Who knows? We'll discuss plans. And then lastly, you know, drop your boys a line. Let us know how you feel. Let us know what you want to know that we know. controlissuespod@gmail.com. AMC, how you living?
Living well, A-Dub. We had to miss last week. Your boy was globetrotting.
Trying to get it in, man.
Yeah, exactly. No, we missed last week. It was awesome. It was great. Got a little break. Now we're back at it. I've been good over the past 2 weeks. I don't know if we like had things, if we had like, if we covered Halloween, but Halloween went well with the kids.
Yes. What did Theo and Naomi dress up as this year?
Naomi was Catboy from PJ Mask. This cartoon. Yeah, it was great.
Oh, man. I used to rock with PJ Mask for a second.
Yeah. She loves it. And she was just running around with her super speed. She wore it for the entire month leading up to Halloween, and actually was wearing the costume still today. She absolutely loves it. Theo went as Miles Morales, Spider-Man.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, he went as Peter Parker the first couple years, and then he's like, I want the black suit. Like,
yeah, I want that real Spider-Man.
Yeah,
I want that Puerto Rican flag, not that Cuban flag, Spider-Man.
Yeah. Oh man. So yeah, they absolutely love it. I think there's still a little bit of candy left, but they're actually over it. So it worked out. They had plenty of candy and now they had their fill of candy. Other than that, I told you in the pre-show, got an accident. That shit sucked, but at least it seems to be handling itself well given the circumstances of the person who owned the car not being the driver of the car and the worries that could come with like trying to figure out that whole situation. So that sucked, but I was safe. Everything was fine. Kids weren't in the car. Didn't even have a car seat in the car, which is good. So if you get in an accident with a car seat, then the car seat is void. So yeah, they would have to pay for that.
Oh, is that how that works?
Yeah. If you have a car seat, it sucks. But yeah, I mean, it makes sense. I guess the worry is that like, if you get in an accident, something gets jostled within it and it's no longer, not even warranty, it's just no longer considered safe anymore. Yeah, so that was fine. And then other than that, yeah, you know, the kids stuff, having the kids, being Theo's in kindergarten now, so it's a little more official. Went to the first parents dinner date thing, one of the students' parents invited over a bunch of other parents from the class and for dinner, so we all went over and hung out. It was very grownish, like just like sitting around talking about like the teacher and what everybody thinks about the teacher, and then at one point shit. It's talking shit, but actually compared to some of the other situations, because there's another parent there that's not in our class, they're in one of the other classes, and they're telling us about their situation where they had a teacher within like weeks of like the school year is starting, having a mental breakdown, unfortunately. And so then they had to like switch up the teachers and all that stuff with them. And you know, like parents are extra secure, like extra protective over kindergarten because it's like the first real schooling that their kids experience. And so, you know, that was a whole thing, like having to replace that teacher like within like a month of starting the school year. So yeah, but
Dealing with nothing but rookie parents.
yeah, exactly.
Rookie kids and rookie parents.
Yeah, rookie parents and then kids who haven't necessarily been put in any type of structure. And so then you're now trying to get them to, you know, get in line with like the situation of education, the system of education. And so yeah, so we sat around talking about that. Then of course they did the let's go around and say one thing that annoys you about your kid more than anything. And yeah, all the parent shit. But it was a good time. They're all drinking, they're just getting trashed. Like it was hilarious.
Yeah.
There's already beef between like a couple of the parents.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, not at the dinner date, but that like I was hearing about stuff from like other parents, like, oh, and then you wouldn't believe that she said this, and I in all my years, like that type of stuff.
How does it feel to be getting into some fresh gossip?
Yeah, I know. It's just like you just want your kid to go to school, and like I guess this is part of it. I guess like if you want to be at all involved in, you know, making sure things are going good with your kid's education, then you get sucked into this other side of like the whole system of like, you know, your kids and the dynamic of, you know, kids being friends, but then their parents not necessarily being friends and walking that tightrope. It's kind of funny. And so yeah, it's great. It's great. I was definitely not looking forward to it, but once I got there and experienced it, I was like, oh, this is hilarious and funny and all the great stuff. Like people, just a bunch of people who like are just, you know, they want to make sure their kid is in a good community, and so the parents are trying to set up a community, to, you know, just make sure that everybody's on the same page. So it was cool. I'm glad that people are at least involved in their kids' education. So
Do
yeah,
you have a favorite parent?
yeah, there's this one group that they're kind of youngish. They're like in their mid 30s, like mid young. That's like kind of young at this school. so like they're like in their mid 30s, and they're really cool. Like they're in the sports and stuff like that, and so yeah, easy to chat with. And then the ones who are hosting the dinner night, like they're like they're characters, but the dad was he was super chill, like a personal injury lawyer, just like,
There
you
you
know, like
go.
what
Already got
yeah
it.
yeah exactly, like he was cool. Yeah, I'm so far I'm enjoying all the parents. They all seem to be very chill, and I will say this, they were all in agreement with how they felt about the election, I will say. So I was like, all right, so at least I know kind of like where I'm at with these parents and what I can and can't say around them.
Yeah.
So that's like one of the tight ropes, is you never really know how people are, and you know, political leaning can affect what people think about education and all that stuff. And so it's nice to know that everybody's kind of on the same page with
Nobody's
what's
gonna
going on.
steal your signs in a few years.
Or burn books and stuff like that. So yeah, that's good. But yeah, A Dub, I want to hear about you because I know that you had some stuff going on. How you been, A Dub?
A Dub's been chilling, man. Hopped on that jet plane, flew on over to the East Coast, visiting your boy Cam T in New York, and gotta say, I was quite impressed, man. It's a beautiful city, but I also wasn't quite ready for the more, like, I don't want to say rural, but kind of the suburban, kind of less developed areas to the north of New York around where Trues lives. And yeah, dude's just having a blast. He's got a nice place. He's there with his lady, got his three dogs, got the game room with the PC. It's just in there alternating between Overwatch and Black Ops. Like I tried to get down with this setup, but he's got his buttons mapped a little differently than I'm used to. So I was like, all right, I just gotta watch the kid at work and let him do that. But we had a blast out there. He took me through Harlem. I got to see where the Apollo Theater is. I got to experience that New York traffic and learn a little bit about the nuance of the rules and the way that people get down out there. Definitely had a bunch of pizza. And I have to say that while I wasn't looking for it to be a life-changing experience or anything like that, however, I gotta say, man, there's something special about that New York pizza. Went to a few different spots, and every spot was like, yeah, this is it. Oh, this is even better than the last one. Like, oh, this is just as great. And it's like, I don't know what they're doing. I don't know if maybe they have some like secret recipes, but there's something dissimilar between New York pizza and the pizza that I'm getting out here on the West Coast. And believe me, I'm on like my second or third pizza since I've been back, just trying to see if I can find something within that vein, somewhat similar. And gotta say, I haven't found anything close yet. So if anybody's got any pizza recommendations out here in Los Angeles, feel free to send them over to controlissuespod@gmail.com because
Yeah,
I would love.
one of my boss, he's from New York, and he loves he really likes Mulberry Pizza, and then
Mulberry.
there's some other place that we order from at work that he also likes. Like if we order pizza, he's kind of the all right, he like George has to approve of the pizza place.
Yes, I like it.
Yeah, so you can try Mulberry,
I
but
will
yeah,
100% be trying that.
but yeah, keep
But
going. How else is your trip?
ton of that bunch of pizza had to get a glizzy from the hot dog stand. Now, according to Trues, like they really don't, apparently they really don't call it a glizzy out there. But I was like, I need to get the glizzy. So I got one, hooked it up. We had one outside the Freedom Tower, and then we went all the way to the top of that thing. And yeah, that like I knew nothing about it. So I was coming in, and apparently one of the best parts of the tour is the elevator ride, because you go up like 100 something stories in like 47 seconds. And it was like, okay, we're in. It feels, you don't feel it like crushing you or anything, but it's got projectors all around. It's giving you the history of the city. And you just feel your ears popping every few seconds. It was like, ah, okay, something is definitely happening here. And then, you step out, they give you the big reveal, and it's like you're up. I've been up in buildings pretty high, but this one, I was watching airplanes go by below us and helicopters go by below us. It was kind of surreal. Got a it made the Statue of Liberty look like a keychain. Of some kind. It was crazy, man. But yeah, Hudson River, saw Jersey. What else? Hung out in Hell's Kitchen, got some pizza on Bleecker Street, spent a good amount of time in Nyack, did like a one or two Irish pubs, and just a lot of cool people. And it's, I don't know, it's got a different vibe. Like the architecture is really what did it for me. You can just feel like the history and the feats of engineering that went into making all of that come together as like just the city is, man, New York is, it's something else. I highly recommend a visit. I would need to, I'm gonna go back one of these days. I want to get a bit more of the city vibe. Like, got a taste of it. It was a pretty solid weekend. But I want to get closer to the heart of it, get feel the pulse of the people, if you know what I mean. So yeah, that was about that. Just gearing up for year end at work and just coasting, man. Just looking forward to my time off, get some more gaming in, spread some holiday cheer, get some sales.
That's
So a
dope.
lot to look forward to.
You know, it's a great city for architecture is Chicago. If you, I don't know if you've ever been, but that's one of those ones. Especially like if you could take a tour, because it's like pretty much every building it has like significance. And if you go on one of those tours, they'll like break it all down, and it's a pretty awesome city that they've like done a pretty good job of like preserving as much as they can of like the original architecture around it. And it's pretty sweet.
Hell yeah. Like it was the bridges for me, man. But yeah, it's, yeah, I'm looking forward to doing more travel and seeing more architecture, like just the buildings and just the way, I don't know. I got a similar feel like I did from Japan with just like how foreign everything looks, but also just the extreme level of development that went into it all. It's nuts. It's staggering.
So how was your, once you got back, how was that gaming going, Adub?
Oh, you know that gaming had to get going. I've been very, very, very like just locked into my Diablo cycle. And it is, at this point, I'm like Paragon level 247, 248. I'm just farming tormented bosses. I finally unlocked Torment 4. Still don't think I'm gonna play on that yet, but it's there. And I feel like I've done all I wanted to do for season 6. So I decided, hey, you haven't really bought anything new recently. You got a lot of games in your backlog. Why don't you do a little chipping, a little chiseling? Just work on that a little bit. So I moved the Mass Effect Legendary Edition back over to my console storage, fired that up this morning at like 4 a.m. when I woke up, and was just moving it forward. Eventually popped a trophy for completing most of Mass Effect 1. So I feel like I'm over the tipping point, the halfway point, and I should be able to keep pushing toward the conclusion. I am overly excited to finally get into Mass Effect 2. Like, that's very much my drive for completing Mass Effect 1. And I'm also looking forward to eventually playing Mass Effect 3, but Mass Effect 2, that's going to be an outstanding revisit that I've been looking forward to for a very long time. So, still loving it. I'm very impressed with the overall quality that they put into the original Mass Effect. Like, the visuals are super clean, the frame rate is tight. It's still got some little odd bugs and glitches there. Like, I was playing for like at least an hour or two where my companions just would not follow me at all, and I was like, am I gonna have to do all this stuff on my own? But I just reloaded a save and that fixed that. But yeah, it took a second to get used to the controls again. Like, my characters are approaching level 50. I have insane armaments. Like, everything is level 9, level 10. I think that's about as high as the scale goes, if I remember correctly. And yeah, man, just, oh man, it's just so good. Just the pacing and the way that it gives you those dialogue bits, those cutscene bits, then it layers some side quests on that you can accomplish within the same mission area. I don't know. I feel like it feels like there's something very special there that may have been lost over the years. Just approaching games with a bit more simplicity while projecting the overall scope of it, like, around the player rather than as a tangible thing that the player has to work their way through. Like, there's a lot in that game, but it doesn't overwhelm you or give you too much stuff. Like, it's very well paced, very well put together. You can take it or leave it as you want it. Like, if you want to explore planets with the Mako, get all those secrets, you can do that. If you want to mainline the story, you can do that. If you want to get lost in side missions and stuff, you can do that too. It's like, you don't feel like you're being penalized for not doing anything. It's awesome. So, playing the hell out of Mass Effect, and I'm still like kind of combing through my backlog looking for things that I can noodle at. Like, I'm still batting around the idea of going back to Death's Door, finishing off the third giant soul, and then that should bring me closer to the conclusion of that. I got that Dead Space remake I'm looking forward to. I downloaded Ghostwire Tokyo from PlayStation Plus Games for November. So I'm hearing good things about that, especially after the gameplay overall that they gave the game. And there's just a lot of stuff. Keep checking my wish list, looking for things that are on discount. Enjoying myself, thinking about getting back into Starfield, but not, don't quite have my foot firmly on that yet. So that's about where I'm sitting with my gaming endeavors. AMC, what have you been playing?
Two games, A-Dub. The first one being the one that you were talking about earlier, Diablo. Wait, you talked about Diablo 4? Anyways, I'm playing Diablo 4. Game is incredible. Absolutely loved it. I'm just so much more involved in this one, in comparison to, the previous ver before the expansion, before Vessel of Hatred. Like, I played the shit out of that one, but I feel like I'm really engaging with the I'm fully engaging with it and have a better grasp of everything and really enjoy my Werebear build. One of the things that happened while playing is, so there's a bit of a progression. I'm playing through the Werebear build. I have my idea of what I want to do with it. I have all my codexes like set up that complement the Werebear build. And then I get to a point where I'm getting some new aspects, and one of them says that the it'll turn pulverize and trample, which are two different skills, into earth skills. And I'm like, okay, that's kind of cool. It adds like a little extra effect on these werebear abilities that I had, werebear skills I had before. And then I'm realizing, like, oh, wait a second, there's a key passive that takes advantage of earth skills. Look at it. It's Nature's Fury. Nature's Fury, I believe. Every now and then, it has a percentage chance when you use an earth skill to then cast another elemental spell. And so I was like, well, I have these two skills that do that. Let me try it out. I switch over the key passive to Nature's Fury with the earth skills, and I just see an immediate, like, just boost and just production or efficiency as far as like just taking out the waves of enemies. And I think the thing I'll contribute that to is, the werebear, he's absolutely powerful, but he's not really a dash around the screen type of character. And so you have the trample, which is kind of like a bull rush, like stampede. And that's a good way to cover a distance while also doing some damage, but that one has a cooldown, so you can't really rely on it to just cover the entire board. So that's where the werewolf companions come in. They help out a bit, but then with Nature's Fury, I'm hitting the earth skills, doing the trample. I do the trample does a landslide that then will click Nature's Fury key passive, and that will either set up like one a hurricane, so there's a hurricane going on around the werebear, so I'm just doing damage around me as I'm moving around and beating the shit out of people. But then there's also the lightning, which covers more area because those zap dudes like on the other side of the screen, and at least there's some other ones that are going on too, and that helps me cover more ground with the werebear. So now it's not just necessarily needing everybody right in my face. Like, I can pick off guys from a distance because of just the area effect that Nature's Fury adds on top of my regular skills. So that opened up just my ability to just burn through hordes a lot quicker, which got me to start pushing through pits. Eventually, I got my way to Torment One. Get to Torment One, still doing all right in the pits at that point, but I'm realizing like I'm gonna start needing the greater affixes in order to really push up my ability to just like really hit that next level. So I'm just kind of working my way around, pushing through pits slowly, but also doing some of the other stuff, Infernal Hordes, yada yada. Came across a unique. So I'd gotten a unique in the past that was. It was for a werewolf, and it basically just said the big thing was on there was werewolf is now your true form, and it gives a boost to all your werewolf skills, but obviously werebear not really helping me out. But then I got a unique that makes the werebear now my true form, and then just gives a bunch of boost to all the werebear skills. I get that, and it's just an immediate boost to my character. So did what I could with that. I think I masterwork that. Got some other stuff, and now I'm just handling business. Went back to the Undercity because I tried it once, and I was like, oh, I'm not in the right place. But now that I have the Nature's Fury, so I can just take out more enemies quicker. And once I got a better idea of the Undercity, I was like, all right, I'm gonna go back in there. Went in there and just blew right through it. And I was like, oh shit, okay, now I can do this a couple more times and really start playing around with this. So do a little more of that. Went and fought a world boss. Hadn't done that yet on since I started playing Vessel of Hatred, and that was nice with the werebear because this is the first time where, as a necromancer, I was on the outside letting the minions do the work and avoiding damage. And when I take damage, it'd be pretty devastating. With the werebear, I'm all up in the world boss's face, just taking the damage, healing, getting more powerful from it. One of the runes that I use, I basically use the whenever I use a potion, I get a certain amount of offering. And so that worked out with the world boss because I was using, I'd take a hit, use a potion, get that offering, and then that offering would go into summoning spirit wolves. And basically, every time I use a potion, I can summon two spirit wolves. So it was just like, I was like almost like wanting to take the damage so I can bring in the spirit wolves and then just add more to my attack. And yeah, I was in there with other people, but like not having to sit on the sidelines, just up in the action. And immediately I was like, I love this werebear. Like it's, I love playing as a necromancer, but this is just a more fun experience for me. So it gets me a little excited for playing as Barbarian and some of the other characters like down the line. But yeah, it's doing that was just everything. I can't get enough of Diablo. The other thing I would say is, oh, so I didn't play Spiritfarer this week. That would have been the second game, but as I was just scrolling through Reddit, just looking for, just general news during the week, I saw that Stardew Valley got an update. And it was the
Got
update
another
that I,
one.
yeah, the update that I had been waiting for. So on PC, Stardew Valley got a 1.6 update, and that was basically years after the game came out. Concerned Ape just decided, you know what, I'm going to add a whole bunch of new stuff, like new holidays, new town events, new items. I believe they might have added in a new character that you can interact with in town. So all this new stuff, just years, just for the hell of it, just decided to add a ton of new content. And then just some more in-game content into it. So that had been out on PC, and Concerned Ape was just like, you know what, I'm now gonna focus on getting that out for console and mobile, that update, but it's gonna take a bit. And it ended up taking longer to the point that Concerned Ape said that they were holding off on developing their next game, which is the Chocolatier, in order to focus on getting that console 1.6 update out. So he'd been working on it for like about a year or so, just putting all their time into it. I don't even know if it's a he, but they've been working on it for a minute. Well, out of nowhere, out of the blue, last week or this week, they decided to announce that it was available. So immediately I sent that to Marissa and I was like, we need to beat Spiritfarer. And she's like, we're not playing Spiritfarer. We're playing Stardew Valley. So yeah, so we ended up debating, and I was just like, you know, if we go to Stardew Valley, we may never go back to Spiritfarer. And she was just like, she was willing to make that sacrifice. So I was all in. So you go in, we restarted a new farm in Stardew Valley. That was the thing that we had decided on. Once we got that 1.6 update, we wanted to do a whole new farm layout and go a whole new route. So in Stardew Valley, there's basically two main objectives that you can choose from. When you get basically the game starts out, you're working at this corporation called Joja, and you're like in a cubicle, and out of nowhere you get like a mail, and it's a deed to your grandpa's farm who had just passed away. And so then you leave the mart to go work to go work on this farm, build it up. It's in this sleepy town. And at the center of the town, well, and part of the, not at the center, but part of the town is there's a community center, and it's run down. And so you're kind of tasked with the objective of building up the community center. But then you can also choose you work at that Joja Corporation, a Joja Mart opens up in town. And so they're kind of like,
Oh.
it's like a Walmart or whatever like that. Like they're gonna come and take over the town. And you can actually choose to build up the Joja Mart that's part of the Joja Corporation. But it's like clearly like they make it seem like they're kind of the bad guys for like what the small town is trying to achieve. And so we went with the build up the community center route. So this time we decided we're gonna actually go to Joja, get the membership, and do all the stuff to build up Joja so that becomes like kind of the mainstay in the town. And one of the things Concerned Ape did was they actually added more in-game content centered around going that route of building up Joja Mart. So I guess they'd realize that people weren't going that way, and so they wanted to make it a little more enticing. So we're kind of excited to do that. So it is going to feel a little fresh in that way, and it is nice to restart the game and do all the introductions, all the reintroductions to all the characters now that we know kind of like all their different character traits, their quirks, and their relationships with different people, and just all the little secrets of the town. We can kind of see that slowly unfold as you get to know them. So it's very refreshing to jump back into Stardew Valley from this standpoint, and just the fact that there's so many different towns, or I mean, so many different farm makeups we ended up going with one that's like, I think it's like three rivers. So there's like three rivers going through our farm, and it kind of breaks up the farm into islands. So it's kind of cool to see that layout and to have to navigate that, as opposed to just having one big farmland. Like, now we have to kind of work around these bridges and everything. But also with that, we can fish more. We can set up fish traps and crab traps all along the river, things like that. So it does provide new opportunities. And we added in a fish smoker, which wasn't there before. So
God damn,
we're
making fish jerky? What?
yeah, exactly. And it's obviously, it sells for more than the regular fish. So, it's a good way to get some money going early on in the game. So it's a different feel, but it's still the greatness that is Stardew Valley. So I am absolutely in heaven playing Stardew Valley again, A-Dub. It's awesome. I'm sandwiched between Vessel of Hatred and Stardew Valley, just two of my favorite games to play, and I'm just ecstatic, A-Dub.
It's a
But
good place to be.
yeah, I'm not complaining. But let's take a break, and when we come back, we will start with our first topic of the week.
Hot topic of the week.
Week. All right, A-Dub, you want to lead us off with the
Yes,
first?
y'all.
Yes, yeah. Topic of the week.
Top topic of the week.
Week.
This is a quick one, a short one. We got ourselves. What can I say? Some reassurance, a renewal of the vows, one might say. We got some statements from Sony, and they are committing to releasing major single player games every year from 2025 onwards. So this is coming at us from IGN. It was a Sony rep speaking on an investor call. It was their IR chief, Sadahiko Hayakawa, and they said that while they have no major first party games coming out before the end of the current fiscal year ending March 2025, the company plans to continue releasing major single player game titles every year from next fiscal year onwards. So we know that we got Ghost of Yote coming next year. Obviously, that's not going to be coming out before March. So, we can narrow it down to the remaining 9 months. But we got that coming, which means that, starting from there, we're going to just be getting those year after year. What's the big title this year? What's the big title this year? Sony, they did the live service thing. Helldivers 2 paid off big. Concord, not so much. And, it's hit or miss out there. But with all the cleaning up and restructuring they're doing internally, unfortunately, that came with the closure of Firewalk Studios. But we're getting this reassurance from the inside, letting us know that we can expect single player games to be back on a steady rotation. Not that they ever really got off of the rotation that they've ever been on. Like, we had 1 year where there wasn't a major first party release, and that was largely in part because of the Last of Us multiplayer game being shelved. So, I don't know. In my opinion, Sony, you're doing all right. We know where your heart is, and you know where the bread is buttered. So, AMC, does this commitment get you back on the Sony train? Because we know you were off for a while.
No, I mean, I wasn't off because of the first player offering. I'm trying to look up, when did Spider-Man 2 come out, the game?
That's a good question.
Was that last year? Let me see. I'm trying to see.
Looking it up.
Yeah, my internet's moving slow
That
right
would be
now.
Spider-Man 1, not Spider-Man 2.
Yeah, it looks like it came out, yeah, at the end of last year. So I mean, we got Spider-Man 2 last year. We did get Astrobot, so that is a single player game this year. Maybe they mean like major releases, but it's not like they hadn't been putting out single player games. And then we know Ghost of Tsushima is on the way, or Ghost of but Yote coming.
Yote, that's
Wolverine with some with some stuff going on that's on the way. And so I mean, I just you know that there's games on the way, but I almost feel like it's because of the whole live service thing and the reaction to Concord. They have to reassure people that they still have an emphasis on making single player games. But
Yeah.
I had never doubted that they weren't gonna. I mean, Death Stranding 2 is also on the way. Like, so like they have games coming. So like I never really felt like they abandoned single player, whether the narrative from like the community to make it seem like that. I almost feel like this is one of those things where they had to reassure people, like, we are doing this for the people who are like getting ready to jump off a ledge. But I think for the people who pay attention, I mean, they still put out single player games, and as you said, they bolster that with
Third party.
third party exclusives. So, I mean, yeah, it was never really a concern for me. It's I just get it. I get that they had to say this just so like people are like, oh, they're getting away from the Jim Ryan era. Like, they're distancing themselves. So, I'm totally fine with this. This did nothing for me, but I'm sure there are people who are like, yeah, we have something to believe in now.
Well, I mean, there are some people who still don't feel like they have anything to believe in AMC. There are some people who think Sony's just full of it. They're just doing damage control and telling us what they want to hear. We got troll of the week, troll of the
Troll of the
week,
week,
troll of the
troll of the
week,
week,
troll of the
troll of the
week,
week, troll of the
week,
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 week, week, week,
week,
week, week,
week,
week,
week,
week.
week. All right. First troll says, "Oh, cool. Horizon Zero Dawn remastered 2025 and The Last of Us 2 remastered for Pro 2026."
Pro.
Next troll says, "Jim Ryan destroyed this generation."
Destroyed.
Still, my man. Still, well, he's not really my man. I mean, geez, the shots people throw around when it comes to this stuff is insane. Destroyed.
Destroyed.
Having a blast.
Yeah.
Next troll says, "Single player games suck donkey ass." All right, you're in the minority there, my good man. Well, actually, technically, you're not. Best-selling games, always live service, always multiplayer. Very seldom single player. So, hey, maybe there's something to single player games sucking donkey ass. Next troll says, "It's okay, phony. If you won't, someone else will. There's millions of people waiting for great games, and I'm sure someone will provide while you guys are searching for your ass in the dark with a flashlight."
What you know about phony? No longer ponies, now it's
No,
phonies.
it's phony. Or maybe they just, or maybe it's a hard age like a pony. Next troll says, "Sony should just go third party." Next troll says, "What a terrible gen for PlayStation. More hardware releases than first party games. Easily their worst console gen so far. I don't think it's particularly close either." So what we got, the PS5 and the digital. We got the Slim and the Slim that you could put the disc drive on. Then we got Pro. And I'm guessing that's like digital and disc or whatever. Maybe it's just one model. So that's like five. So you're saying that Sony has not put out five first party games? Let me see. Gran Turismo 7, Horizon 2, Housemarque. They didn't own Housemarque when Returnal did its thing, so I'll give you that. Astro Boy, God of War. I got four. I don't know what to do. I don't know. Maybe there's something to it. And last show says, "Sometimes you got to learn lessons the hard way." Yep. But I mean, that's how you learn lessons, my dude. You try to do something different, you try to branch out, you try to push your limits, and hey, you may succeed. Sometimes you may not, but you'll never know if you don't make that endeavor. So to all these trolls, it's like I get where you're coming from, some more than others. However, at the same token, it's like you don't get the things that Sony is most well known for unless you get the things that Sony doesn't do well along the way. There have to be those experiments, there have to be those risks in order for them to know what works, what doesn't, what they can do to innovate, what they can do that's original, what can push the industry forward. So, live service. Out of that whole push, we may have gotten Concord, or we didn't get Concord, but we got Helldivers 2. So, the whole push for live service wasn't all bad, in my opinion. If we can have that kind of a height juxtaposed with that kind of a low, like it isn't like everything they did just failed. So there was something to it. And I imagine that we're going to benefit from that in the long term because there are going to be lessons learned from Helldivers 2. There's also going to be, techniques, content, structure that's learned from that title that's going to go forward into future things that also might strike as true as Helldivers 2 did this year. So, AMC, you got anything for these trolls?
Yeah, and I'd say too, like on top of that, you said like the benefits that they can take with them down the line, especially when you think about, so Concord, unfortunately, that's just done. But think about Last of Us, the next Last of Us could be completely bolstered by having this multiplayer component that they held back and now can add to whatever the next single player experience will be. So now it won't be like this tacked on multiplayer. They'll have this thing that they've been, fine-tuning over years while working on the single player content that they could possibly throw on top of it to give that next Last of Us release a little bit more life. So, there's potential there that the next Last of Us game could be even bigger than what we expected it to be. And then yeah, like they'll take away the lessons. I'm glad that they tried. Like I know people say they're chasing trends, but maybe they're striving for greatness. They're thinking, you know what, maybe we can make one game that people will want to play for years to come, and we'll get, look at us in Diablo. Like we want more. We want more Diablo. We can't get enough of it. And PlayStation like thought maybe we could come up with a game that people would just love to come back to every day and play, and they swung and they unfortunately didn't get it necessarily with Concord. Well, they didn't get it at all with Concord, but Helldivers held it down for a long time. As I pointed out, it's still what, the second best-selling game of the year. So that
Damn.
was clearly a commercial success. So yeah, it's if you don't try, then you never know what you could have achieved. And they tried it out and unfortunately did not work out, and it really didn't work out for Firewalk. But yeah, I don't knock them for trying to do something great as opposed to just, doing what they'd been doing, which is the PS4 generation, putting out great single player titles that are exclusives. They could have kept doing that, but even look at the start of this generation, they did that with what, Horizon 2. People were looking at Aloy's face trying to figure out how much peach fuzz was there and how fat it was. God of War came out. I mean, people did enjoy that, but also, people really enjoyed the previous, the God of War, what, 2018 or whatever one release. And then Spider-Man 2, same thing. Spider-Man 2 came out, people enjoyed it, but it was, a lot of the conversation was really when the first Spider-Man came out, just because it caught people by surprise. This one, people were just anticipating, they knew it would be a good game. But as far as just like, oh, this is the place to be, like that was more of, the first Spider-Man on the PS4. And so I felt like they had stuck to their guns with what they did on the PS4 and gave us more of those games. And they were selling well, but they weren't necessarily getting the reaction, maybe. And Sony wanted to, make a splash. And so they tried to do something bigger. And it, they're now recalibrating, and I can't fault them for that. But that's all I got to say about those trolls, A-Dub. Should we move into the next topic of the week?
Topic of the week. Before we do so, I thought it was interesting you brought up Diablo because I know it's probably not entirely accurate, but according to my console, I'm approaching 1100 hours.
Oh my gosh. Yes. I felt like I put in like, I'm at like 100 and something hours.
Oh,
That's
holy shit.
great. That's great.
Dude, I don't know where the time went.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fucking amazing game. And that was like one of the things I wanted to bring up in the last topic. We had already moved on and I forgot about it. But just the idea, like kind of the idea of when the previous generations, they gave Xbox, trash. They are like, they gave it shit because they didn't have any first party offerings. Like, but it's all about where are the games, where are the games. And I will say, I'm on my PlayStation not buying first party games and absolutely loving the games that I'm playing. And so there is
Absolutely.
something to that, like just enjoying your ecosystem and not necessarily everything having to be like, it is definitely awesome when you have great first party offerings, but there are so many great third party games that, like, as you said, can give you thousands of hours of entertainment.
At
So
least.
it is important, but you you have to, you can't overlook that there are just so many games that it's, first party, it helps things, but it isn't everything necessarily. I'm going to move into the next topic. We're going to stay with PlayStation A-Dub. This is from PlayStation Blog. They announced 50 plus games that will be enhanced on the PS4 Pro at launch November 7th. They went through all the enhancements like ray tracing, the PlayStation Spectral Super Resolution, the PSSR, the PISA, the silky smooth frame rates of 60 hertz and 120 hertz, upgraded GPU depending on your TV. And so yeah, they also said people were like, well, what about the games? What are the games that will have this? So here are the games that will be enhanced at launch on the PS5 Pro A-Dub. I'll just run through them really quickly in alphabetical order. Alan Wake 2, Albatross, Apex Legends, Assassin's Creed Mirage, Baldur's Gate 3, Call of Duty Black Ops 6, EA Sports, College Football 25, Dead Island 2, Demon's Souls, Diablo 4, Dragon Age Vanguard, Dragon's Dogma 2, Dying Light 2, EA Sports FC 25 Enlisted, F1 24, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, Fortnite, God of War Ragnarok, Hogwarts Legacy, Horizon Forbidden West, Horizon Zero Dawn Remastered, Kayak VR Mirage, Lies P, Lords of the Fallen, Madden NFL 25, Marvel Spider-Man Remastered, Marvel Spider-Man Miles Morales, Marvel Spider-Man 2, Naraka Blade Point, NBA 2K25, No Man's Sky, Pal World, Paladin's Passage, Planet Coaster 2, Professional Baseball Spirits 2024, 2025, Ratchet and Clank Rift Apart, Resident Evil 4, Resident Evil Village, Rise of the Ronin, Rogue Flight, Star Wars Jedi Survivor, Star Wars Outlaws, Stellar Blade, Test Drive Unlimited, Solar Crown, The Crew, Motorfest, The Finals, The First Ascent, The Last of Us Part 1, The Last of Us Part 2 Remastered, Until Dawn, War Thunder, Warframe, World of Warships, Legends. So that was a mouthful. 50 games, a dub. So what do you think about, Call of Duty Black Ops 6, Diablo 4, Power World, some of these games that, well, first of all, just the offering, but some of these games that are on the Xbox, this might be the best place to play them, a dub, from an enhancement standpoint on console. And Baldur's Gate 3, does this at all entice you to get on the PS5
I mean, it does,
Pro?
but at the same token, I still don't want to, man. It's, I don't know. I keep looking at comparisons, and I'm taking stuff in. Like there's a video circulating so showing the difference between Bloodborne running on the base PS5 versus the Pro, and it is noticeably sharper. And that kind of stuff is always very enticing to me. But at the same token, I'm looking at the trade-in deals and I'm trying to figure out how I can get my data onto a pro and get rid of my five without having to settle for store credit. So I don't know,
So wait,
maybe I
the
just.
oh, you don't have an external hard drive. You upgraded the hard
I
drive.
do have an external, but I have all my hard drives are filled. It's,
Oh, okay.
yeah,
I was
like
gonna say
I.
with the external, could you just use that to transfer your data over? But no, you can't, I guess.
I don't know exactly how that works. So maybe I should look into that if it's an option. Like the big thing is, I just want to have, if I can get it to where I have a smooth transition and I can get cash for my base console, then I think that's something that I would do. But barring that ability to flip it like that, I'm kind of cool just staying with the console as it is. We'll see. We'll see what happens. I'm not motivated anymore to get it, and I'm kind of losing motivation as time goes on. It's still on my radar. It's definitely something I do want to do, especially
When you
since
when,
I plan to go
sorry,
PC pretty
yeah, I was about to
soon.
ask. Like you were up close and personal with the PC setup. Did that at all entice you to finally get that PC Master Race thing going?
I get that PC Master Race thing going. I'll be able to have this generation at the highest spec, so at least I have that. And then I can just wait out a PS6 Pro and see how that goes. Because I don't want to be in a situation where I'm double dipping all the time. Like if I can get on that, like, oh, I don't get every iPhone, I get every other iPhone. Like if I can get on that cycle, then that would be cool. But the game list is impressive. I imagine that's going to grow over time. I just don't, I haven't seen anything where it's like, oh, I must have this. I've seen a lot of things where like, oh, that's a little nicer, but nothing that really just pushes it past that tipping point to where it's a must have or even like really stimulates my enthusiast muscles. So no, we'll see. I'm glad it's out there for the people that want it, especially now that all the rumors and speculation can finally be quelled. And like it was a long journey for a lot of people to get to a PS Pro being on the market. So I'm glad we got that one in the books. And yeah, I can wait.
Yeah, you already know where I'm standing. I'm not necessarily interested. I am interested to see if that becomes like a console war thing with the fact that a lot of these Xbox games are now enhanced on the PS5 Pro. But I mean, Microsoft clearly said that they're not interested in, putting out an enhanced console at this point. So
And I
they.
respect that greatly.
Yeah. I mean, I'm definitely, especially at the now, especially with the prices that they're at, it's just a little too much to be just upgrading. As and you said, like if the trade-in isn't really there value wise, then it's really something that's only for a particular market of fans, like a very high tier, somewhat FOMO laden group of people. But
Yeah.
yeah, it is what it is.
I mean, I know it's entirely far-fetched, but I would like to see Microsoft make a first party exclusive that doesn't have an S version or just doesn't have parity with the S. Just get everything you can out of the Series X and would see how that stands up to the rest of the industry. Like, I would greatly enjoy that.
All
They
right, yeah, the next,
probably
yeah.
don't have to make a Pro. Like, they put so much technology in that box and it just, I don't know. I feel like the Series X still might have a bit more leg room that we just haven't seen yet, but I digress.
All right, what you got with the next topic of the week?
Top topic of the week. Well, I got another interesting one in the Sony vein, AMC. So it seems like Sony has just been putting out releases and statements all over the place, but they've also been filing patents, my man. Yes. And they also patented one with a PlayStation controller that has a dedicated rewind button. Oh, interesting. Let's get some more details. Per the patent images, the button could be located where the share button on the controller is now. Another image shows an on-screen interface buttons similar to those on a TV remote, with images indicating play, pause, next, previous, fast forward, and rewind. There's also a return button. So far, it just sounds like a standard remote, like a virtual remote. Maybe they're integrating the PlayStation remote into the controller so you can get the best of both worlds there. But then the article goes on. The patent description suggests that this feature would be useful in a number of ways, such as reminding a player of important quest information they might have missed, or how to reach a location they've been to before that they cannot recall how to access. It also details that a player might bookmark certain sections of gameplay they may want to revisit later, with the rewind button allowing them to quickly revisit those saved moments. So AMC, being someone who is very prone to save scumming, someone who hates to backtrack, is the rewind button the perfect fit for you?
Yeah, no, it sounds cool. I mean, I already saved scum, so I mean, maybe that would be helpful. I wouldn't
I
want
was
it to
just
be,
casting aspersions on
yeah,
you.
I wouldn't want it to be something that just feels like entirely cheap, where it's like you're in the middle of a boss fight in a Souls game, and you just like backtrack a couple moves to
Yeah.
the right thing. But yeah, I don't mind certain things like especially games that have long saves where you can't just save at any point, because there are a lot of games like a good example is Midnight Suns. It's a turn-based game and you can save pretty often. That's awesome. Or at least save at the beginning of an encounter. That's great too. And then there's some games where it's kind of like, we'll let you know when the game can save. And so you'll be gone for a while and you're like, especially with someone like me where like, a kid just might wake up and I gotta like get away from the console. And so I need to like, or I need to save or I need to fucking leave this on until I can get back to it. So things like that are super helpful. That like I can kind of try to save a little bit more time if I need to rewind or yada yada yada. So I do appreciate something like that, but I wouldn't ever want it to get to a point where it just feels like I'm just always undoing every mistake in any type of game. But I do appreciate that, there are other people that feel that games are too punishing. Maybe this is a workaround for that sentiment. We shall see how they would implement something like this.
Yeah, I can definitely see it going to this dystopian gaming future where people are just rewinding their mistakes out of their playthroughs, or like just at conversations, like, let me pick this option. Nope, rewind. Let me pick this option. Nope, rewind. Up this one, he gave me a gun. That's the option. So, I don't support that particular path that could emerge from these kind of features. Wherever, I mean, however, when I'm thinking more about the current gaming landscape, people such as yourself with children, or just people in general with other responsibilities that may come up unexpectedly, and you're coupling that with more and more games these days that have live elements or just don't implement a full pausing feature, where if you set that controller down, there's no guarantee that whatever you were doing is going to be as it was when you come back. So I look at it where these kind of features could fill that gap and give someone like yourself, if you're playing Diablo and you're, well, I don't imagine it will work for a live service game, but just in a different kind of game that doesn't have a conventional pause feature, you could just hit that button, whatever happens, happens, jump back, like, okay, well, I didn't lose that back in it. Change the diaper, did it, got the dinner going. And yeah, so I just see it working like that. I've played around with rewind features before. The Forza series has that, and it's useful. Sometimes you just come into a corner too hot and it's like, nah, let me just rewind those 7 seconds and let me hit the brakes a little earlier. So there's a balance to be struck. It can be useful, but it should only go forward if it isn't cheap or can be exploited, is my overall feeling there. But hey,
Anything else or
see,
move to the next topic?
you got that next topic of the week.
That
Topic of the
topic of
week.
the week. Lime duties. All right, next one. This is an exciting one, A dub. I'm gonna have to repeat myself. So IGN. This is from IGN. Nintendo has confirmed that the yet to be announced Switch 2 will be backwards compatible with the original Switch games and will feature Nintendo Switch Online. Line. Let's see. Nintendo President Shuntaro Furukawa shared the news during the company's corporate management policy briefing, revealing a bit more about the successor to 2017's Nintendo Switch. So this is in a Twitter post. We're not calling it the other thing. This is Furukawa, Nintendo wrote on Twitter. At today's corporate management policy briefing, we announced that Nintendo Switch software will also be playable on the successor to Nintendo Switch. Nintendo Switch Online will be available on the successor to Nintendo Switch as well. Further information about the successor to Nintendo Switch, including its compatibility with Nintendo Switch, will be announced at a later date. So, A dub.
Okay.
This is something that's you can't expect with Nintendo that, their games, their consoles will be backwards compatible. But, with the overwhelming success of the Switch, they decided, rather than making people rebuy all the games again,
Like they always do.
we're gonna let you carry your library over. What do you think about this move by Nintendo, A dub?
It's bold. It's exactly what's needed in order for them to preserve the momentum that they built with the Switch and carry that for another hardware generation. It's also incredibly enticing to people who perhaps don't have a Nintendo or maybe even weren't certain that they'd be jumping onto a Switch 2 the moment it came out. Like, I imagine that this pretty much gives you the green light to get a Switch 2 the moment it comes out.
Oh yeah, that was a concern even with, so I haven't played it yet, but I bought Zelda Tears of the Kingdom, and a part of me was like, fuck, am I gonna start playing this game and then they're gonna put out like a remastered version on the Switch 2 that's gonna like technically be better by the time I start playing this game. But now I know I could even possibly hold out, maybe get some enhancements on the Switch 2 for Tears of the Kingdom. So that's it's more of a, it's definitely a win-win for the consumer as far as I see. So it went from a, oh man, to a, oh hell yes. Like all these games now I can enjoy just carrying over. I also own like Mario RPG, so I can bring that over to the Switch 2 eventually.
Damn.
Yeah,
Live
it's
alive.
alive, got that, almost beaten it. I'm in like the final area and I just haven't gone back to it, so I need to just push through that.
Or you could just wait until you get a Switch too and finish it on
Exactly.
that.
Exactly. Good point, A-Dub. So yeah, it's I am so happy with this move by Nintendo. It's a definitely a bold move. I was one of those people, I bought like it made sense with all the, obviously with all the Wii U games. It's a different, I think it, the Wii U didn't use the tiny cartridges that the Nintendo Switch had.
Yeah, I
But
think it still had the DVDs.
yeah, but even in general, like it was great, like that they ported all those Wii U games over to the Switch, and they added a ton of content on top of what the originals had. So they did feel fresh if you missed the games before they ported them over. But now at this point, they ported over everything that they needed to from that console, and they have all these successful games on the Switch. And you know, one of the things that Nintendo's known for is not really dropping their prices. So anybody who shows up for the Switch 2, they're still going to be paying full price more than likely for those Switch games. And then everybody who already bought them, they get to carry over the library. And it's a smart move also on top of that with, I know a big thing that what Phil Spencer said when it came to the console generations and Nintendo, not Nintendo, PlayStation's lead over Xbox was the fact that, you know, they, people had their digital libraries set up at that point, and so they wanted to carry that over to the PS5. And so that gives them a head start from the PS4 to the PS5. I think, yeah, as you said, this Nintendo Switch just doing gangbusters as far as sales, just passing every other console that Nintendo has put out for the most part. I have to see where they're at with the, I don't know, maybe the SNES. I'm not really sure what was the best-selling one. Or maybe at this point they're just chasing PlayStation. And so yeah, the console sold so well, and people have built up these libraries of games that they absolutely love from the Switch. And knowing that all those will be carried over now to the Switch 2, it definitely makes me comfortable because yeah, a lot of my games were digital. I didn't buy a lot of the discs or the whatever, the cartridges for the Switch.
Yeah.
So knowing that that digital library will carry over definitely provides a lot of comfort for me. And
That's
then, you know,
dope.
the online, there's I'm sure a lot of people have saves for those online games that they've added, because it's like what they have all the, what is it, the N64, Genesis, Super Nintendo, Nintendo, Game Boy Advance. They have all those games on the online, and you have online, you know, saves. So now people can look forward to all that carrying over to the Switch 2 as well. So it's a very, it seems like it's going to be a very seamless transition when it comes to the new console, and that is absolutely awesome that they decided to go this way.
It might even be a seamless onboarding as well, because someone like myself coming into the game, it's like not only do I have to look forward to Switch 2 titles, but I could look back at Switch titles. I mean, it
Triangle
suggests
strategy.
triangle
Yeah.
strategy. Forgot all about that. Forgot all. There's so many like Nintendo games, the Nindies, the Nintendo Indie. So many different things. Maybe I could finally play Loop Hero. Oh, maybe I can get that on Xbox. I need to look that. Ooh, if I can get Loop Hero right now. Okay. Sorry. Sorry. Got on a tangent there. But like it also demonstrates that perhaps Nintendo is committed to this physical medium that they're using. Like we're very much used to Nintendo just Like, all right, our cartridges are like this now, but wait, our cartridges are different now. Oh, we're doing this now, and we're back to cartridges. Now we're on little discs. It's always something different. So it's nice to see some things remain uniform within a Nintendo ecosystem. And at the same token, given how small those cartridges are, perhaps there's even room for them to have a second newer medium. But who knows? It might not even be necessary. However, this is outstanding news, and I've always been the one on the show, like, just another reason to own the Switch. And with Switch 2, the Switch itself, with its massive library of hit after hit after hit, is a reason to own a Switch 2 now. So, oh man, I think I gotta do it, man. It's been, what is the last Nintendo console that I think it was the GameCube. Like, I played a bit of the Wii, I've handled a Switch, but the last Nintendo console that I just straight up played and got the most out of, GameCube. And that was some of the finest gaming memories that there could be. Legend of Zelda, Wind Waker, one of the greatest games of all time. I believe, wasn't it remastered or remade? And I could play
No,
it on the Switch.
that's the one that I think people are still holding out for.
Ugh.
So yeah, that will be a big one whenever it comes.
Now, if that's a Switch 2 release, I might just have to bite the bullet, my dude, and get that going. But yeah, so this is great news. It also is just more additional concrete details about what this Switch successor is going to be. So, with new information on the table, that means we must be drawing closer to an official announcement. So, fingers crossed, everybody. But yeah, let's get into that next topic of the week, top
Week,
topic of
topic
the
of the
week.
week. Actually, let's take a break and we'll jump right into that topic of the week. We are back. A dub.
Yes,
You got the
y'all.
next topic of the week.
Top topic of the week. Well, we're going back to the Sony tip, and this one's a bit of a somber note, a bit of a difficult read. Marvel's Wolverine director departs Insomniac to take charge of Perfect Dark. So let's see if I get some substance here. A little something for the listeners out there. Creative director Brian Horton has not been part of the project since mid-year, project being Wolverine, and the Wolverine's game director Cameron Christian has since taken on a different role at Insomniac. Wolverine's new creative director is reportedly Marcus Smith, and its new game director is Mike Daly. Smith previously served as one of three creative directors on Ratchet and Clank Rift Apart, and Daly as one of its three game directors. So I feel like there was a portion of this that was left off, namely just stating plain and clearly who departed. But Wolverine's director going to work on Perfect Dark. This can be looked at a couple ways. Do we want to go doom and gloom, or do we want to go smiles and rainbows? Because I mean, doom and gloom is that all, Wolverine's not coming together, he's jumping ship. But I mean, if Wolverine's not coming together and he's jumping ship, why would Microsoft want him to work on their first party game, which has been taking quite a long time to come together as well? So I'm leaning toward the other possible explanation, where maybe he just got an offer that was too great to refuse. And he went after it. Because I mean, that happens too. Sometimes it's not always, rain and thunder on everything. But who's to know? I mean, we hear control issues. I know for myself, I don't know for AMC, but I didn't partake in any of the Insomniac leaks. I don't see myself doing that anyway, because I kind of respect the companies, like, coming out and showing us what it is they're offering us and letting us observe it from the perspective they want to see it, rather than like, oh, what you working on? Let me look in your files. Like, I'm not that dude. So yeah, I'll see what Wolverine has to offer when they finally reveal something to the public. And then I guess once we see what's going on there, we can determine if, like, oh, well, good riddance, or, oh, please come back. I don't know. Personally, I don't think I don't think it's all doom and gloom. I think Homeboy just got a better offer, or maybe making that jump was at the right time for him. Wish him the best. Hope Wolverine and Perfect Dark both benefit from his contributions. AMC, do I have a blind spot here? Am I missing something? Like, what's the dark underbelly?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I agree with, I tend to lean where you what you're saying and what you with what you're saying in that. I mean, odds are it's probably, I mean, he's one of the top people at a company, but still there's levels of promotion or opportunity that comes with taking on different projects. I'm sure it seems like he was recruited. So that means they had to have offered him something interesting that maybe would be a sea change to what he would had been dealing with in Insomniac. And so yeah, maybe he felt like it was a good time to jump off. But if anything, this could look as you could look at it as a sign that he felt that Wolverine was in a good place where he could then step away and the team just takes it like because like think about like this is different, but Reggie, feeling myself, Fils-Aimé, he stuck around during the Wii U horrible era, and then when the Nintendo Switch was off and running, he hands it over to Doug Bowser. So sometimes people leave places when they're in a good spot, as opposed to just jumping ship every time. And this could easily be one of those situations where he felt like, all right, where Wolverine needs to be, it's I think in a good in a safe spot where I can feel comfortable with this team not being like hindered by my absence. And also, you just look at the track record of Insomniac. Like, are they really a studio that you hear a lot of negativity with development hell with their games and stuff like that?
Insomniac
See,
does not miss.
yeah, see, like it's it, yeah, like Insomniac was one of the steals when it came to acquisitions, for Sony. And yeah, that's you just gotta look at the track record sometimes and just be like, yeah, something just doesn't seem to add up with what we hear about Insomniac. And so I'm gonna go ahead and just assume that he was offered something better. And Wolverine's loss is Perfect Dark's gain. As you said, it's a game that had been in development for a while. People finally saw it and they were excited about what they saw. And they obviously, over there at Perfect Dark, felt like they might need another person to come in and maybe put on those, I don't know about final touches, but those bits and pieces that maybe they felt like they hadn't been hitting the mark on to really push this game into another stratosphere. And so, yeah, that's, I feel like it's a good sign that maybe one for Perfect Dark, they're still looking to improve the game on top of what we've already seen. And then yeah, maybe Wolverine is in a good place where, he can step away and not, ruin the entire process. Because people do like to, not burn bridges. And so he doesn't necessarily want to just screw over his colleagues. And yeah, I think I tend to lead on Lint. I tend to lean on the side of positivity when it comes to this. And we shall see when Wolverine comes and when Perfect Dark comes. But I think that's more the narrative that I would like to believe when it comes to this.
Well, to further support that narrative, we have some additional information here. See, Horton has since jumped the first party fence to Xbox as the new creative director for Perfect Dark, which is being co-developed by the Initiative and Crystal Dynamics. Horton previously served as a game director on 2015's Rise of the Tomb Raider at Crystal Dynamics. So, if Crystal Dynamics is involved with the development of Perfect Dark, perhaps Horton, perhaps there's still some colleagues there, perhaps there's still some of that. What is it? What is it? Just that senior talent with the old tricks,
Yeah.
knowing how stuff really goes together. Like perhaps he might be necessary to actually wrangle that project and get it going toward a tangible conclusion. So, when we saw Perfect Dark, it looked phenomenal. They didn't show us too much. They didn't show us too much of it being played. So there were some interesting ideas. It looks awesome, very ambitious. So maybe Horton is exactly who they need to get it over the finish line. So more and more, this is just seeming like it was kind of the right job at the right time kind of situation more than anything else.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Yes. So looking forward to both games, Wolverine and Perfect Dark. And yeah, you got that Insomniac game directing on your first party Microsoft release and your first party Sony release. Yeah. Then
Next
we can
topic.
see if it's the talent or the platform.
Exactly.
All right, AMC, you got any more topics of the week? Top topics of
Topics
the
of the
week.
week. This is my last one. This is a just more of a discussion, hypothetical type of topic. A dub from IGN.
No,
Helldivers
let me some
2.
hypotheticals.
Yes, Helldivers 2 creative director reveals his dream crossovers. So, you know, everybody when they played Helldivers immediately started making the Starship Trooper comparisons. So now, let's see. In a tweet, Arrowhead's CCO, oh, Chief Content Officer,
There
and
we go.
Helldivers 2 creative director Johan Hilstedt cautioned against doing too many crossovers, saying it would dilute the IP and make it a not Helldivers experience. However, he also published an extended list of IPs he really would
Yeah.
love to take on with Helldivers.
This
So,
is
A
like
dub.
O.J. Simpson writing the book, like, if I did murder.
It'd be a horrible thing to murder somebody, but if I
But
were to
here's
do
how
it. Yeah.
I would have laid it out.
So, A dub, I'm going to read off this list, not too long, and you let me know what would be at the top of your list when it came to Helldivers crossovers. Aliens, Starship Troopers, Terminator, Predator, Star Wars, Fifth Element, Blade Runner, Warhammer 40K, Trench Crusade, Mutant Chronicles, and Drop Zone Commander. So, A dub, of that list, any of those ones that you know jumped off the page for you? Aliens, Starship Troopers, Terminator, Predator, Star Wars, Fifth Element, Blade Runner, Warhammer, Trench Crusade, Mutant Chronicles, and Drop Zone Commander.
It was a strong list, and I was weighing some options until you got to Warhammer. And there is no game out or on the way that is more set up to be a Warhammer game than Helldivers 2.
Damn.
If they can get that crossover in, like, full, I mean full crossover, reskin everything Warhammer, all the vehicles, all the robots, all the bugs, like all the propaganda, all like basically just record and skin a whole new game. I think that would be totally fine. And just with the way that development studios handle Warhammer products, like I don't understand how they pull together all the resources and talent necessary to record all of those vocal lines, do all that writing and cover all that lore in a given Warhammer title. But just Helldivers, Warhammer Helldivers, oh my God, the chainsaw. Like, can we get at least a Warhammer War Bond? Like that with just Warhammer weapons, Warhammer armor, Warhammer boost.
Oh,
Like
that would be good.
you have to have the chainsaw in there. That has to go down.
Bolt gun. Oh.
Like maybe melee, it could be a big melee weapon thing. Where you get the chain sword, you get the hammer, and just, oh man, all kinds of stuff. So much stuff. Warhammer is so rich. And the honorable mention will go to like Terminator. That would be an easy
Yes,
swap for the
that was mine.
for the robots, that would be an easy swap. And despite everything else, that would also just fit really nicely into the Helldivers universe. I feel like there has to be a game that gives us some quality approximation of a Predator experience where you're just playing the game, but there's also a Predator out there, or two, or three. Like
You see
that would
those
be
wavy
dope.
lines moving around? You're like, oh shit.
Or like you're running with your homeboy and you just see his head explode. Like, whoa. I got the, and then you call it in, you tag it, everybody comes in, and it turns into this hunt across the map. You guys hunting the predator, but also the predator hunting you, setting traps. Oh my God. Can you imagine if it set traps and like you're running through the woods and the log comes swinging and you fall into the pit with the spikes?
Cover yourself in mud.
Or it throws the crate, like, and at the same time, it's fighting the enemies as well. And like, it's taking trophies.
taking heads and everything.
And like, oh, and then that could be another mechanic. Like, the longer that the predator survives, the more it learns and the tougher it gets to defeat.
And then, like, you already call in the nuke. You take down the predator. He sets off the countdown. Yeah, get the fuck out of there.
So that's the mini game. Yeah. And that's how you destroy the
Yeah.
predator. And like, that would be, see, and that's something that would fit perfectly into a Nemesis system where you don't have to worry about having a whole bunch of like adversaries. You could just focus that entire system on this one that's learning and growing and just getting all up in your shit. Yeah. So yeah, Predator, Terminator, but especially Warhammer for me, AMC, how about yourself?
Yeah, but the top of my list would be a Terminator. Just my first thought is, whenever you get Terminator, it's always like, oh, like Sarah Connor, oh, you gotta protect the was it John Connor? Oh, like, but
Run away.
yeah, but like we always see this futuristic war of like man versus machine, and fucking Terminator is just stepping on skulls and debris as they're coming after the humans. You're protecting the base. So like imagine that, like you got a squad and there's just Terminators coming to take out, and you're fighting for the survival of humanity against Skynet, future Skynet. I think that would be an awesome experience from, a live service standpoint, like squad based standpoint, like that future war in Terminator where it's like, all right, we've given up John Connor, he's now just giving you missions. We never prevented the future from happening, and now you're doing your best to now fight for the survival of humanity. I think that would be an awesome take from a Helldivers perspective with Terminator to do something like that. That'd be great. The
You
other
could
ones, yeah.
also kind of make it, you could give it kind of a roguelike feel where it's not really about, like, you're never going to defeat Skynet. You're just locked in this eternal war fought across time. But since it's taking place in the future, one of the objectives could be, okay, we need to seize the time machine technology and we need to send someone back. But then you do that and it like changes the landscape of the game that you're playing. So like every time you send someone back, that's a successful run, but then you're introducing a new change. I don't know.
No, exactly.
I'm a roguelike man.
Yeah, because that's, I mean, that is Terminator, right? It's like you figure out some information and then you go back and try to like improve the future. And so that's perfectly made for a roguelike, like kind of like, all right, we learned this about Skynet, we got taken out, so we had to go back, and now we have this information on the robots, maybe have a new vulnerability, maybe come up with a new weapon. Now you can take that with you into the next run. And as you do more and more, you're just getting further into, the Terminator complex until you get to
Getting closer to Skynet.
the T5 million, and then you gotta fight him.
Oof.
Yeah, I think that would be a good move, like for Terminator. It's like that's set up as far as like time travel in a video game. Roguelike is perfect for that. So I can see that working, A-Dub. I like your ideas, A-Dub.
And I just want to bring creativity and newness to the industry. And I'm available for consulting positions.
Yeah, that'd be sweet.
Lunches, lunch chats.
Yeah, that would be great. Do you have any other quick hits, A-Dub, before we get out of here?
Quick hit. Let me see. Well, IGN's reporting that Hogwarts Legacy, developed by Avalanche Software and released in February of 2023, is now up to 30 million units sold,
Damn.
while Warner Brothers is saying that Hogwarts Legacy 2 is one of its biggest priorities. So the game they wanted to boycott, the game they didn't want to review, the game that was the best-selling game of 2023, one of the best-selling games of 2024, and Warner Brothers single-player and Warner Brothers is making a sequel one of its biggest priorities. The same company that told you that it was going to be leaning heavily into live service after the failure of Suicide Squad, Kill the Justice League, and multiverses. So, the market kind of works sometimes. So all you guys got to do is spend your money where you want these companies to spend their time and resources. that'll just tell the tale. AMC, is this going to push you over the edge to getting a copy of Hog Leg or what?
Nah, I mean, I've never watched a movie. I don't have the same
Damn.
affinity for this franchise that other people have. But yeah, I'm happy that it did well. I'm still annoyed that I had to be put through all that. Like, they're canceling. This is their people are gonna forget about it. And it's like, no, this property is way too big. If IGN decides to not talk about it, it's not gonna be the death knell on Harry Potter, because Harry Potter is just bigger than IGN or any other media outlet. And people are gonna get that
Bigger
shit.
than the culture wars,
Yeah.
bigger than any offhand remarks J.K. Rowling might make.
Exactly. Like, there's some things that are just bigger than all that. And it was unfortunate that we had to go through that all the way up until launch, but it's nice that the game still found its audience, still sold incredibly well, and it's now not something. I'm sure if it had done well, we wouldn't have heard the end of it. And so because it did well, we don't have to really discuss about how, a few people that feel some type of way about J.K. Rowling ruined this
Yeah.
entire game. So yeah,
Yeah.
good on them.
Instead, we get to discuss how Warner Brothers can possibly learn and grow from what they've learned with the original game. So taking all the just amazing visuals and just that overwhelming attention to detail in a Harry Potter universe, the freedom that they offer players, the spell making and actually attending the school. Like they'll be able to stand on the shoulders of that success and go even higher, knowing that there's going to be an audience tens of millions strong that will at least be highly interested in the release of this one. So maybe we'll see even more single player offerings out of Warner Brothers, given the same time and attention because this one worked. I love to see it.
And also, it's like at least that's a good sign for the future of WB, because I know, like, when Suicide Squad came out, people were like, oh, like, oh, who's gonna acquire them? That's immediately like a game comes out and it's like, now that team has to be acquired, because they spent all their money on that one game and will no
Yeah,
longer survive.
they have no more money.
We put it all in the Suicide Squad, all the money. And so yeah, it's one of those. It's a good thing. It's an I guess an offsetting story to any loss that came with Suicide Squad. We still got Hogwarts Legacy just racking it up sales wise. So yeah, that is a good sign. And as you said, something they could take forward. Maybe we get like a Hogwarts game with a roguelike, or not with a roguelike, with a Nemesis system in it or something. But who knows?
Just something, bring the Nemesis system back. Like, jeez.
Anything. Yeah. Stop holding out. Wait, what you doing? You do
Jeez.
it.
And then
Any other? Yeah, what
one
else you
last
got?
quick hit here, just because this is it's kind of personal for me. But Take-Two is selling off Private Division. Whether you know or not, Private Division was a It was a label under Take-Two where they could kind of incubate and nurture indie projects while, offering resources and support to indie developers in order to bring their games out. I can't think of any Private Division games off the top of my head, but maybe something in this write-up will spark some memories. Take-Two has sold indie publisher Private Division to an unknown buyer in the wake of shuttering Roll7 and Intercept Games, saying that it wants to focus on its core and mobile businesses going forward. While virtually all of Private Division's live and unreleased games will go to the new buyer, Take-Two says it will continue to support No Rest for the Wicked, which is being developed by Moon Studios, creators of Ori and the Blind Forest, as well as Ori and Will of the Wisps. This is the recently released action RPG from Moon Studios that's currently in early access. Take-Two announced the move during Wednesday's earnings results, saying in a statement, "We are grateful for the contributions that the Private Division team has made to our company and are confident that they will continue to achieve success in their new home." So, I mean, I like the idea of Private Division, especially coming from an imprint like Take-Two, just swimming in that GTA money. And it's like, sprinkle some of that on the little guys, like help bring some interesting projects out to light. And they were successful in doing that. Let me see if I can bring up their list of games and see what we're doing. I mean, okay. So Ollie Ollie World, The Outer Worlds, Kerbal Space Program, Rollerdrome, Hades. It says Hades. I don't know if that really means Hades. I'm not as knowledgeable as others might be. But some pretty decent titles. And is this great seeing this stuff coming out of Private Vision? And now thinking about Outer Worlds, that was probably one of the bigger games that came out of them. And that was Private Division publishing an Obsidian title at a time when people weren't really as hot on Obsidian as they are these days. So, giving these teams a shot and making some truly impressive stuff. So, at least they continue their life under new ownership. They're not being shut down. People aren't being laid off, as far as I can tell. So that's awesome. Looking forward to whatever it is they bring to market in the future, especially when No Rest for the Wicked gets a full release at some point in the future. AMC, does this changing of the guard impact you in any meaningful way?
No, but yeah, as you said, happy to see that at least they're what they're offering to sell the company rather than just shuttering or whatever is going on there. So it's yeah, it can live on. And yeah, that's you said this is their indie support. I don't know, as much as people like to poo-poo publishers and whatnot, they do EA has their was EA Access, not Access, whatever it
Yeah,
is,
originals.
the originals program. So you like to see that
Although
from.
I think we might have another quick hit on that when we keep going.
Okay, yeah, it's good to see when publishers are there to help. Those studios get their first or a couple games off. I know, I think it was the EA Originals. They kind of cover everything up to basically breaking even, and then that's where they kick in with the kickback. And so yeah, they provide that funding that a lot of these studios need to, get moving. And I'm glad that these programs exist, and hopefully, yeah, they. I mean, a lot of people like what Roller Drone, that seemed to be a good game. There's always a couple of these games where oh, I like that game. I want to see this studio still around. So yeah, hopefully, that keeps going. What were you looking up, or what'd you find
Yeah,
about
I was
EA
under the
Originals?
impression that I read something saying that EA Originals might be going away. But I can't find any substantiation there, so let's just put that one away
Yeah,
and not talk about it for the near future. But I mean, EA Originals is producing some cool stuff. Immortals of Avium came out of EA Originals. I believe It Takes Two, A Way Out. So award-winning, Game of the Year winning games. So it's awesome when these big publishers make these labels for smaller projects and more original titles. So, that's why it's great that Private Division has changed hands rather than simply being shut down. So it's bittersweet, but it's sweeter than it's bitter. We'll see what comes of it.
Any other stories before we get out of here? It do.
That's it for me, my good man.
All right. Well, this is Control Issues. I am the AMC.
And this is a bill. We are Control Issues. Thanks for playing.
Sucker.
Control Issues!